Hey there, you're welcome to Founders Connect, a show where I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in Africa. This is the right show for you to be listening to if you love behind-the-scenes stories about people, their careers, and not their businesses. My name is PC Timmy, and I'm very, very, very delighted to be your host. You can follow this conversation on social media, hashtag Founders Connect. You can watch the video of each episode on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect on YouTube to find the playlist. Also, please share this podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, leave a rating, and you know, share it, hashtag Founders Connect. Enjoy the episode. Today, we're having a conversation with Kennedy, aka Joseph. He's the co-founder and CEO of Keeper. I'm very excited for having this conversation with him, and I know you're going to enjoy it, so make sure you stay and watch the video. In fact, probably share the link now and tell someone, hey, I'm about to watch this video, watch it with me. Anyway, I'll see you at the end of the video. I've been looking forward to this conversation since we decided it was going to happen.
Me too.
I want to know a lot about you.
I'm glad you're finally able to.
So let's start, right? I usually like to start my conversations with like just getting to know the person before we start even talking about what the business you're currently building. So like, tell me, where did you grow up? What was growing up like? Where did you school? What was the fondest childhood? I want to hear as much about your background.
How much time do we have?
Let's find out.
So really great to be here. I was born in Lagos, and I don't remember very much from there because my family moved out of Lagos when I was 8.
Okay.
But I grew up in Calabar, so in very many ways I'm a Calabar boy, you know, in all its trappings. And for me, growing up in a very small town like Calabar had, in very many ways, is one of the most significant things that I think has shaped my identity.
How
now.
So?
Because one, it's a university town, right? The biggest institution in Calabar now is the university. My parents are professors there.
Oh, okay.
And so I also grew up on the university campus. And in very many ways, I think about it as a great place to be a child, as a great place to really focus your energy single-mindedly on the things that you want to. And there's very little things competing for your attention. So I'll say in many ways, like my parents, my family had a lot of influence, and my friends too, over how I grew up in Calabar. Grew up.
What's the fondest memory growing up in Calabar?
Oh wow, there's quite a ton of them. I live very close. I went to school very close to, to home, secondary school that is, and lived with all of my friends from high school. It was like after school every day, we all like went to play football together. So it was growing up in a very small, immersed community. There's so many memories from playing soccer every weekend with my friends, ultimately going to University of Calabar, being on the debate team there. I think some of my fondest memories actually come from the debate team.
Why so?
I mean, like I got into college at 16, university at 16, and from a very young age, I had the opportunity to start to travel across the country, travel across the world to compete with other folks. For debate. And so it was just growing up, like spending my teenage years in this very competitive environment and mindset, and lots of it was fun. Like, you almost like expedited how quickly I grew up, and here I am today.
Interesting. So you went to University of Calabar and studied philosophy. Why philosophy?
I had always wanted to study law, right? You know, it's typical for when you're in SS2 for you to start to think, I have to fill out my jump. What do I feel on there? Like, what do I want to study? And you start to rely on other people to tell you what it is. You argue a lot, so you probably be a good lawyer. Like, that's how myself and many of my classmates decided what we wanted to study. So I always wanted to study law, but ultimately I realized that, one, studying law was like very time consuming. It was going to take at least a 7-year commitment. And thinking about it, I'm like, I probably could do something that is adjacent and that could also help me, learn how to think from first principles. I mean, I have the words for it now, but I wasn't thinking of it as sophisticated then.
Right.
And philosophy was, the next best thing. I just learned a lot about the philosophy department at University of Calabar. My parents were friends with some of the professors there, and so I got a chance to meet some of them, and I was very clearly sold.
Very interesting. So tell me about moving from like University of Calabar to like becoming, going to like do your master's degrees in China. What were all those transitions like? Why did you choose to go do your master's in China at that time?
Yeah, so I graduated from UNICAL in 2017. And immediately after I graduated, I moved from Calabar to Lagos to work at Accenture's office there. Mm. Accenture is a management consultancy. And at the same time...
And what were you doing there at that time?
So basically I was on the management consulting team, so consulting for clients, government.
How did you end up there from a philosophy background?
Yeah, I mean, consulting is something that anyone can go into. I think the most important thing for me was, like I said, the ability to think from first principles. Mm. And also with doing debates, there was just a whole lot I was exposed to.
Right.
So economics, finance, business, and a lot of that knowledge proved very useful. But the most important thing was being able to take a problem, and that's what you do in consulting every day. Apply first principles thinking and try to walk through it with colleagues. So it was a very smooth transition for me. And I'd always wanted to do it, to be honest. At the same time, so after I got into Accenture, at the same time, I was, just thinking about what I wanted to spend the next 2 years doing. Mm. And I got into this grad school program called the Yenching Scholars Program. And when I did, it was very interesting for me because, so it's this scholarship program that brings graduates from across the world and brings them to China's top university, Peking University, for 1 to 2 years of grad school study. And it was fully funded. So I was like, when next in my life would I be able to take 2 years to go live in China? This seems like a great time to do it. At the time, I was the first Nigerian who was accepted into that program. And I also thought it could be very beneficial. I could actually help improve the awareness and standing of the program on the continent.
Right.
And also help usher that program into the continent and, help them learn how they can recruit more scholars from Africa, which I successfully did when I, went. So based off all of those, I'm like, it checks out. I would go do this. It's risk-free. And so that's how I moved to China about 10 months later.
And what was it like in China? What was like the highs and the lows of the experience? Because I mean, it was vastly different from living in Calabar.
It was very different. I think when it dawned on me was when I got on my flight, it took me 19 hours to fly there, and I landed. I'm like, this is it. I don't speak a word of Chinese. I don't know what all these meals are. This is it. I there's no going back. So that was the first time I confronted the reality I was going to be in China for 2 years. It was great. I think the most significant thing was the community of scholars. So in my class, there were 100 people from 39 different countries. Mm. And so we lived together, had meals together, went to classes together. So I don't think I've been exposed to so much diversity at once. Mm. And I think that was just, it was phenomenal. So I think that was probably the highest point. The lowest point was different things. Like, it was the first time I had to live through winter. And so that was brutal. Like, I don't think people talk about it enough. For me as a Nigerian, young man, it was really brutal going through that. Of course, having to deal with the culture shock of being, nothing strange, nothing extraordinary, but, overall, I had a really great experience and I'm glad I did that. And
if you're going to pick one thing that was very fundamental to who you are now from that experience, what would it be?
It's probably what I said earlier. Most significantly, being exposed to so many people at once helped me learn very quickly. And I think the acceleration of the development of like my emotional and cultural quotient, it helps me every day with navigating leading the company. For example, at Kipa, dealing with so many personalities, it almost helped me build a significant connection with the world outside of where I had grown up and where I was used to. Mm-hmm. I think that probably was the most important thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so tell me, so we're still working through your career, right? So Accenture to China, what was next after that?
So at the onset of the pandemic, I moved back to Nigeria. It was very...
Was that because the program had finished or because of the pandemic?
As I came back in December of 2019 for Christmas, like to hang out with my family. And then a day before I was to fly back to China in January of 2020, I received emails like, don't come back, cancel your flights because of the pandemic, it's really serious. And so we had to finish the program virtually the next 6 months because I was due to graduate in 6 months' time. And at the same time, even before I went back, my co-founders and I, so one of whom is my brother, already started working on our previous company. So we built, before Kipa, a software software recruiting agency that helped very early stage companies in the US hire software engineers from Africa. So we started working on that, and the plan was, okay, look, after my grad school degree in July, I'll move back and we'll really like turn this thing on, start to work on it. So it's like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm here now. And when I woke up every day, all I spent my time doing was just working on this thing. And we thought whatever time I had left, I just spent it writing my thesis.
And how did that company go?
So we learned quite a lot. Two things. One, we learned how to work with each other. I mean, we're doing, you know, significant amount of revenue on a monthly basis. We weren't growing as quickly as we wanted to. And secondly, we learned about, you know, the because of the way the company was structured, there were imminent talent supply constraints that would place a cap on how much we could grow. And we knew deep down that our skill set, our potential could be put to use to solving a bigger problem. And but it was necessary for us to do that to be where we are today.
Yeah, that makes sense. So keep going. Tell me what will happen next.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we worked on that for a little under 9 months. And like I said, we had a hard conversation amongst ourselves and decided, look, guys, we could be working on something bigger. And we took a step back. We shut the company down. We wrote, you know, a message to all our clients then that we're closing the company. And, you know, we fulfilled the outstanding requirements of our contract. And we took 2 months off. Like, just, guys, let's go and figure out a problem. Let's take a different approach this time. Let's go figure out a problem that is worth solving. And so during that time, we traveled across the length and breadth of Nigeria. We were living in Uyo at the time. So that's a part of the story I missed. When I moved back, we moved to Uyo, like a very small city, capital of Akwa Ibom State.
So your co-founder, the one that's not your brother, he grew up in Calabar as well?
No. He grew up in Lagos and Abuja.
Okay.
So we met debating because he went to Fita. So we met competing against each other. That's how we met. So all three of us moved to Uyo. And the goal for that was to minimize our cost because we weren't taking any salary, and to maximize our focus, you know, away from all the noise and you know all the things. And so we were at the time, so we traveled to Calabar, of course, it was next door, went to Onitsha, went to Lagos, went to Aba, you know, meeting merchants, really spending time amongst
them. So when you guys were traveling at that time, what was it that you're looking for? Because now you mentioned merchants, but when you started with just like the US clients and you went back to you said, oh, let's go find any problem and solve that problem. So how did it then become, let's meet merchants in
every city? Great question. So we had gone through, I think, like 6 to 8 different iterations of like problems before we even set out to travel, right? I don't even want to start to go through them, but we took like 6 weeks and went through them, you know, got on the phone with, for example, we are thinking about building a customer communications platform for businesses.
Okay.
And we got on the phone with businesses. We learned, okay, this is probably not the right business for us to build. But we knew within the small to medium business industry, there was a lot of problems and that would potentially present themselves as opportunities. So what we wanted to do was to figure out the hardest pain points that we could solve.
The hardest.
The hardest, you know, and that if we solve, you know, had the opportunity for massive upside. And so that's why we set out to travel, to meet them and decide if it's even worth pursuing and if we were the right people to pursue it. So,
so what did you find?
Quite a number of things. You know, when we went on this trip, we saw, I mean, of course, as we all know, small business owners, you know, managing their businesses using very archaic means, with pen and paper, doing everything from payroll to staff management to accounting to inventory management with, you know, physical ledgers, or some of them with none of those at all. And, you know, just relied on their minds and their instinct. And we thought that was a very interesting problem. So very many of them in the middle of the day close their businesses to go out to the houses, offices, churches of people who owed them money to politely remind them to pay them back. And we thought these were very interesting problems to, you know, that these merchants experienced. And, you know, one of the most significant things we found out, if I should put it in one line, is the reason why, you know, small businesses keep failing every year is because they don't have access to finance and resources to grow their business. It's simple. So we thought that was interesting. And we just took all of those lessons, all of our notes, and came back to you, you know, to figure out, okay, now what do we do with all of this? I think that was the turning point. That was when we really decided, okay, we're going to build the company that eventually became Keeper. We didn't have a name for it then, of course. And we decided that we were going to take the approach we did, start by building a bookkeeping solution, layer on different aspects of software. So inventory management, debt management, build an MVP in 3 weeks, give it to a few people, see how they react. If not, we go back on the road again and try to figure out what next to,
you know. So tell me about the skill sets between you and your co-founders, because did you guys actually build the MVP in 3 weeks? Mm-hmm. So like, I'm curious to know the skill set that you had to be able to actually weigh it out and validate it.
Yeah. So there's three of us. Jephthah is our technical founder, and he handled building it. We had a friend, Jude, who ultimately joined the team. He's currently front-end lead on and in the company now. So he joined us as a contractor then. He had a full-time job. So he was working with Jephthah to crank out this MVP. For me and Duke, we handled like community building. So while the product was being built, we started to actually build a community that would launch the product to.
And how did that go? How was
tremendously
how did
well,
that?
Tremendously well. So what we started by doing was we initially get crashed like a course where an SME consultant was selling Excel accounting templates to small businesses for like 5,000 naira. So we went into the customer like, look, we're building this thing that's cool. Like, if you're interested, join this WhatsApp group. And we had about 100 people join the WhatsApp group. Hmm. So we took them, put them in a Facebook group, and every day we're sending like posts out to them. This is how you grow your business. This is how you increase prices. Like, we were just providing value to them for free. And we were obsessive about, turning that community into our own. Hmm. And we grew that community from 100 people to about 50,000 people in that Facebook group. And ultimately, when we rolled out the product, it was those merchants that we rolled it out to. Mm. And so Duke and I spent a lot of time on that.
And what was the first iteration of that particular product?
Yeah, so it was a very simple accounting tool that merchants used to record how much they made and sold every day, and also keep track of like all of their customer details. So if Peace comes to Kennedy Laundry Shop to transact, maybe like get her clothes laundered worth of 1,000 naira, you tell me you pay me back at the end of the month when you get your paycheck. They use the app to record all of those details, and the app now automatically sends SMS and WhatsApp reminders to you to pay me back at the end of the month when you get your paycheck. So that stays top of mind.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so that helped merchants get their money back 3 times faster than they otherwise would have. And okay, this is cool. Our early users love it. We stayed with 400 of those merchants for about 13 weeks before we rolled it out to everyone else.
Mm. So what were the key things that you used to measure success at that point before you rolled it out to the other people, rolled it out to the public?
Yeah, so it was both qualitative and quantitative, right? So qualitatively, it was the feedback, the conversations, feedback to make like the product better. Mm. We saw users really engaged and it was delivering value to them. Quantitatively, the basic things, usage, retention on those early users, the transaction activity, how much they were actually logging on the product over time, and on all of those metrics, it was really strong. And we thought it was time for us to roll it out.
Did you guys monetize from day one?
No, we did not. So our strategy was, let's build a product that allows us retain merchants and become the de facto way they do their business, and we needed to de-risk that. So that's why we did not monetize from day one.
Okay, so are you guys making revenue now or still?
We very recently became revenue positive, so that's good, and it's top of mind for us.
Okay, so when you guys launched after that 13 weeks, what were the next steps? Because up until then it was just still you, Duke, Jephthah, and the contractor, right? Mm-hmm. So at what point did it become, we're not just building a product, we're building a company? Like, what was that milestone that made it seem, we're going to hire a team, we're going to raise money?
So within that time period, it was four of us, and as we started to launch to more and more people, we opened up to our wait list in phases. We were okay, we have a lot of customer support requests, and it was impossible for just Duke and I to continue to handle those. Mm. So realized we needed to put the team together. Our first hire was a social media manager who also did customer support. And then we had a customer success team because we had a few more engineers. Slowly we became a real company. We already started to get, interest from investors. So we were speaking to a few of them. And not very long after, we raised some capital to allow us build and skilled.
Also, what's the meaning of Keepa?
So it was very funny story. Before we rolled out to app stores, we needed a name for the product, right? So Duke and I sat down at like 11 p.m. We had a long sheet where we're going like different names. what could we name this company? And so like, oh, Bookkeeper. You know, the last part of that we could, and we also needed to check for domain name availability. So you're like, oh, Keepa, it sounds cool. You know, there's very little digital footprint for this, and we could really just own it. So we had like an hour to make a decision before we rolled out, and we stuck. Yeah.
Very interesting. What's it like leading a company with your brother? Is he your older or younger brother?
My younger brother, he's younger than me by about 18 months. It's great. Duke and I are incredibly good friends. So even if we weren't brothers, like, I would still build a company with him or do anything at all with him. There's an incredible amount of respect that exists between us. And I also like to joke that we fought all the fights as children. So there's no more fight left in us to fight. And it's great, you know, it allows for a significant amount of trust from day one. And, you know, it makes for better communication too. And, you know, it's great. I wonder what his responsibility is.
Are there any challenges?
From building with my brother? Mm-hmm. No. I mean, the challenges are typical challenges founders would face. I don't think any of that has stemmed from, you know, the fact that we're siblings or grew up together.
Makes sense. So tell me about the challenges that you've just faced generally. Beauty, Keepa's probably like 18 months.
A lot less than that. We're under 1 year old. We launched in June.
Like in the last 1 year, raising money, building a company, rolling out to the public, what has been like the key challenges?
Yeah, I would say one of them is in the segment that we're building for, and I'm sure every other founder building in this segment would say this, you really realize after you start that there's no shortage of things to build, because there's so many problems, there's so many solutions you potentially can build. And one of the key challenges is really staying disciplined about the value proposition you want to offer to your customers and being very specific about what it is you're building for them and what problem you're solving for them. I think that's been one. And so to frame the challenge more holistically, it is defining a roadmap that makes sense for the product and for the company. Again, keeping in mind there's so many things you could potentially build, and you know, all of them are equally lustfully appealing. You know, the typical challenges a company in Nigeria would face is, one of them is hiring talent. I think what we're seeing now is there's a lot of capital available on the continent. And so it makes it even harder to find talent, not just because people are with the companies that pay the highest, but also because what I'm seeing in the past 6 months, I've spoken to more than 1,000 candidates. We're seeing is there's a lot of...
That's a lot of people.
Yes. There's overinflation of the titles of people just because there's capital. And most times, it's very difficult to find competent candidates, especially around product and growth in our market. Like, the product and growth market is still very early on. And it's also one with like low entry barriers versus engineering. So everyone thinks they can do it. Product growth marketing is something everyone thinks they can. Oh yeah, I can do it. But it's really hard. And so that's been the most significant difficulty from a hiring perspective.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So I saw on your LinkedIn that you spent a year working for or at TikTok, right?
Yeah.
What was that like? Because you probably missed it when you're talking about your career journey.
Yeah.
And how has the experience you had there affected how you're building your company?
Yeah, so I did work for TikTok while I was living out in Beijing for about a year.
Was that part of the scholarship program?
So not part of it, but like I was recruited from there directly. You know, at the time the company had seen the success of Instagram in Africa, and we had about 500 million users in other parts of the world, but very little footprint in Africa, and wanted to expand. And that was a very unique experience because it was like working at a startup inside of a startup. I mean, out in Beijing, there were like 12,000 employees at the office there. But I was only in a very small team of about 8 people with limited budgets, and really had to figure out how to sustainably take this product to market in Africa. And so, you know, I was the only Nigerian on the team at the time, and Nigeria, of course, was our biggest market. And so it was an incredible experience. A lot of what I did was, you know, around user acquisition and growth, so retaining users, you know, some of the earliest users of the product. You know, the goal was, let's get as many creators as we can get on board, and that would help us attract other people. And so it was the whole thing, right, from acquiring users to, oh, like, you're wearing a bright colored shirt, you know, change it and make this video again, like, participate in this challenge again. It was, you know, it really like building a startup. And I think a lot of those lessons, you know, were carried over, and, you know, we still use that as we think about what it means to build a company.
And what are some of those lessons? We can be a bit more specific.
Yeah, so to be very specific, I think it is the sort of manual, you know, doing things that don't scale, if I were to use something that, you know, a phrase that is well known now, and doing that, staying very disciplined about ensuring your early users are happy. And if they are, then it's easier for you to scale your processes. And I think that was very reflected in us deciding to stay with 400 people for 13 weeks and try to get a product market fit with them, to use that word loosely, before we open up to others. I think that's probably been the most significant. But, you know, the second thing is also how you can, being in an organization like that, it's very easy to see how ambitious, you know, top down the organization thinks about new product lines, how it thinks about its place within, you know, the entire industry. And a lot of that intangible, you know, mental framing is super important. And I think it continues to inspire how we lead the team at Keeper today.
Yeah, that makes sense. What would you say has been like the biggest lesson you've learned so far in your career?
Oh, wow.
Essential to Keeper now?
That's a great question. All of the experiences have been different, but, you know, I would say the biggest lesson so far at Keeper is first things first, you need to spend a lot of time developing perspective about your users. I think it's something that's probably said, but not enough. And that way, it makes it easier for you to trust your gut when you have to make decisions. It allows for more room when it comes to product decision making. You know, where should this button be? How should we frame this? Would our users be able to relate to this? And so for me, that's the most significant thing I've learned while, you know, we're building Keeper. It's very important to, you know, to continue to stay close to users personally, and not just have a team that does that, but you as a founder. From an organization building perspective, it's also very important to not give out titles too early. I've learned that too. Like, you know, when you're building an early stage startup, have people focus on different things, but don't build a title driven organization where folks are chasing that. It's deleterious for a startup, and, you know, just makes for bad culture in the world.
And is that something you do now based on knowledge that you have or an experience that you've had with titles?
I think it's both, like, seeing what happens like in the industry, but also observing the mistakes we've made in the past, and that we've had to correct through very hard conversations. But I'm glad that we've had the insight and, you know, the mental strength to go back and correct that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, we've talked a lot about you and just where you're coming from and what you're doing right now. And key things that stood out for me is how you studied philosophy, you grew up in Rio, you spent a year in China, and, you know, diversity there. I'm kind of wondering, if you're going to put all of these things together to, like, sort of like say, oh, these are the things that have made me, or this is how me being reading philosophy affects how I build my company, or this is how the diversity I encountered in China is affecting how I build the company, how would you summarize that experience?
So I think, even going back, the most significant influence that I've had is my parents, especially my mom. So I was homeschooled in the earliest part of my life by my mom. She has been a teacher all her life. I think that probably is the foundation for everything. And yeah, that's the foundation for everything. You know, to summarize it, which you want me to do, I think I've definitely not been afraid at any point in my life to take risks, to leap into the unknown and try to make sense of life with the data points available to me, and that's something that I'm always going to continue to do.
Yeah. What motivates you? What drives you? What's the reason? I mean, now you have a company, you have people to employ, people's salaries, right, to pay, but beyond the fact that we have a company to run, what's the intricate thing that's driving you as a person?
I think I think I've, you know, again, like my parents allowed me to realize very early on in my life that as individuals, there's a lot of potential that we have. Mm. And especially coming from where we come from, with the litany of problems that we have, if you're fortunate enough to have good education, you know, and exposure, then it behooves on you to apply that to, you know, to create things, to maximize your potential. Mm. And I think at its core, like, you know, independent of all the, you know, the noise, I'm deeply motivated by the call to maximize my potential and, you know, who I can be in this world for myself, for my family, you know, and for our state.
Someone just asked you, like, you met the Queen, how was it?
It was fun. It was a nice experience, I mean, but, you know, it was... Yeah, a few summers ago, I think it was a great experience, and it's just one of those things that when you think about, yeah, it was fun. But yeah, that's it. I think the most important thing from meeting her, because it was in a cohort of people, many folks from that cohort are still very close friends of mine and have been on the journey. So I think that's the biggest takeaway from that.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Is there anything about your life or career so far that you would do differently if you had the chance to?
That I'll do differently. I think there have been times where I've been tempted to, as a result of, you know, like peer pressure, to do things like other people, to make decisions because other people make decisions that way. And I think every single time I've realized that, you know, it was bad. And, you know, more and more I'm learning that I have to obsessively trust my gut and my instinct. And what that means is also I have to spend a lot of time building that and not just being whimsical, like, oh yeah, I trust my gut, but investing time in building that and developing personal opinion about my life, how I want to live it, you know, about running a company, about dealing with people, building relationships, and not relying on the crowd for that.
Makes sense. Thank you. What would be your advice to other people who want to build businesses? Like, they're like, oh, can I be such a nice founder? Like, I like what you're doing at Keeper. I would like to, you know, build a company as well. You're currently doing that, and yeah, kind of like your peers. What would, just from your experience, you know, building that company and say, you know, this is not going to scale the one we wanted to, shutting it down, doing the hard work of coming up with ideas, doing your research, validating that, then building another company again. Yeah. What's the key advice that you can share from that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to build a company, right? I don't think there's ever been a better time, especially like in Africa. You know, I think we should spend more time truly thinking about whether building a company is the best, highest leverage way for us to leave an impact in the world today. Mm. And is the best way for us to apply our skill set and potential. For some people, it's an obvious yes. And for some others, maybe there needs to be a little more thinking. And I think that's the most important thing. And once you decide that that's what you want to do, then you're all in. It may take 5 years to figure it out. Once you're all in, you're all in. It's almost like you're married and there's no option for divorce. Mm. I mean, not being wedded to the idea itself or to the company, this is the best way for me to create an impact. Mm. And I just have to stagger around, stumble around to figure out, you know, how I'm going to do that directly via what company.
Okay, so basically just figure out for yourself whether that's what you want to do, and if it is, do it.
Yeah, whether that's what you want to do, and very honestly, you know, if it's the best way for you to leave an impact in the world, you know. Mm.
All right, makes sense. So what do we expect from Keeper? Less than 1 year, probably have another 3, 4, 5 years, 10 years. Don't know how long you guys are going to do this for. But at least for the immediate foreseeable future that you see, what can one expect from Keeper?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're going to obsessively, you know, build and roll product out. We're taking a product first approach in this market. For our users, a good thing about having users like us is there's no shortage of things to build for them. You could keep building for the next 20 years and not exhaust all the problems, right? So that's really good for us because we enjoy doing that. We enjoy spending time with them. You know, moving forward, a lot of our focus is going to be on financial services and truly helping them like bridge that access.
So not just accounting anymore.
Yeah, so not just that. You know, it's an entry point. It's a great way for us to start to solve a critical pain point. You know, but there's more and more problems. These businesses need money. I think, you know, if you ask any business person, that's it. I need to sell more. I need more customers. I need more money in the door to keep my business alive. And I feel like
so
every company.
So there's a credit feature that's coming in. So.
So I mean, that's one way, right? We don't know yet if that's the best way for us right now to solve for that. But that's a very great way to we've seen people do that in our market and in other markets. So we would continue to chip away at that, and it's a very exciting phase for us, and we would not be doing anything else with our lives at this point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's very confidently said. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Final question. Is there something you wanted to share or answer that I didn't ask you about?
To share or answer? I think we covered a healthy breath, and I don't know why people watch, Founders Connect, but of course, always very happy to chat and share my personal experience. And I think the most important thing, a lot of people who watch this maybe thinking about building their own companies or thinking about venturing into tech, and what I said earlier, think about whether that's really what you want to do, and just spend time building your skill set. We're in a market where there's so much there's so much going on, but at the same time, once you're someone who is a high quality individual, like, the roads would always be open for you. I think we young people should continue to spend our time and attention trying to make ourselves that, reliable people who are not just, all flashy, but have depth, when it comes to our skill set. And
so build yourself a lot.
Exactly.
And just focus on the problems that you want to solve and impact that you want to create.
Precisely.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you so much, Kennedy.
Of course,
this was a really interesting conversation getting to know you. So thank you for honoring me.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast to the end. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I hope that you have been inspired or motivated to get better in your careers, in your businesses, in your life. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the videos on my YouTube channel at PCTimi, or just search for Founders Connect and you'll find the playlist and then subscribe to the channel. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to it. Leave a rating also so more people can find it, and also talk about the episode that you listen to. #FoundersConnect across social media. Hey, I'll see you in the next episode. Peace out.